Glenn!
What's up?
Can't explain. Get to the car, run!
Massive thanks to our sponsors. Thanks, big thanks to Dino Dini for sponsoring us and paying for our hosting. To Tony Day, to Michael Keith, and myself and Mr. Sid, we've donated some money this month as well. Please, if you do get a chance, do send a donation. You can do it on the homepage of the Retro Asylum website. That's www.retroasylum.com. Do join the forums and take part. Give us your feedback and let us know what you're thinking of the shows. Is there anything you particularly do like? Anything you don't like? And don't forget to leave your iTunes reviews. We're giving prizes away. The September prize is a PlayStation 1. And over the coming months, there'll be more prizes to be won. I must go now because Glenn's driving is getting more erratic and I think I'm about to soil myself. Heck, Glenn, that was some serious driving. Have you been on that test driver again?
I have, mate. And it's test drive, plonker.
I'm always getting it wrong, Glenn. Can't wait to get inside and record. I love doing these podcasts.
This is Retro Asylum, the UK's number one retro gaming podcast show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Retro Asylum, the UK's number one retro gaming podcast show. This is episode 52. I'm Glenn Atkinson, and today with me is...
Uniforix.
Yay!
Yay!
How are you, Uniforix?
I'm brilliant.
Or Anthony, I call you.
Anthony, Uniforix, whatever you want.
Long time no see, long time long speak.
It is, yeah. How was Retromania? Because we haven't spoken since you went down there.
Oh, I had a absolutely brilliant time at Retromania. I actually went down the A1 to Retromania, and I tell you, I never seen so much rain in all my life. There was like, the road was like, it was like a river, and my car was like a boat going through the A1. And I have no danger getting a speeding ticket because I don't think I went above like 50 miles per hour.
No, well, I saw the pictures on Twitter because Retro Hunter had tweeted about all the rain that had come down there, and he showed the arcade that was down there. The water was halfway up the walls. So I was hoping that his local arcade wasn't destroyed, but I've heard since that it was all okay. So did you see a lot of the flooding? Did you see any of that when you got down there?
Luckily, I didn't see any flooding, but it was raining so heavily, the roads were just full of water. But luckily, where Andy lives, it wasn't flooded.
Good, good. So tell us a bit about Retromania then. What were the highlights of it, and what sort of machines did you see down there?
Oh, Retromania, I really enjoyed it. It had all sorts of machines down there. Before I mention anything, I'd like to give a big thanks to Steve, who provided the game systems, because, God, what a collection he's got.
I think he's just posted on the forum, actually, and put a full list of all the machines that he's got. I think his handle that he uses is Starship UK.
Oh, his house is like, it's like a museum. There's like Commodore 64s on the floor, there's ZX Spectrums on the floor, there's arcade machines, there's computer games on the floor. You could tell that he lives and breathes games. And he has like 14 television sets in like a shed. Me and Andy had to get the TVs out from the shed and put them in the van. It was like doing, like, what Andy says, Tetris. You had to, like, build it up and make sure it all...
Stack them perfectly in so they don't
fall down.
Excellent.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Andy mentioned on the podcast about him driving in the van. And he was backing up in the van into his driveway, and he actually hit a post. Oh no!
Ooh,
we're trying to stop him.
Was that his van, or was it, did Andy say that was hired?
I have no idea. But there were no damage to the van.
Okay.
He went very quite slowly, but we said stop, and boom.
Just in time.
Just in time. Anyway, I tell you, I really enjoyed setting up the systems, and Andy was right. He was talking on the last podcast saying Glenn looks like he really enjoys setting up systems. I really did, because I like to get these systems out I've never seen before and set them up.
I know.
And it's so strange how each one of them has different plugs, different things, different holes and stuff you put things in, and different ways set up. It's just mind-boggling.
I can just imagine.
I really enjoy setting them up.
I know how excited you get when you get around retro machines. So
yeah.
I can just imagine you now. Like a little kid in a sweet shop.
Oh, yeah. It was like a sweet shop, And Steve's house is like a big sweet shop. It is. It's
full of all sorts.
Games galore. That's what I call it. A buffet of games.
Some of these things, unfortunately, are just too far away from me, Glenn, for me to be able to make it. But I'm hoping that to go to the Play Expo in Manchester.
Yeah, I will be at Play Expo.
Oh, excellent. On what day? I've been offered a pass for Saturday. So it'll be the Saturday that I go.
Yeah, it's on the 12th and 13th of October.
The 12th and the 13th.
Of October. And do you know it's in Manchester? Ah, a lot more up north for me.
It's a lot closer for me too, Glenn, so that I'm very happy about that one. All right, so what kind of things have you been up to then, moving on from Retromania? What have you been up to?
Well, I've been up to, first things first, I'd like to give a very, very big thanks to Andy. And he gave me a Sega Mega Drive. And it's the first model one. And now I've got, how many games I've got now for it? I've got 4 games for it now. Because I recently been on eBay. And I saw Sonic 1, Sonic 2, and another game. It's just a picture of... some kind of army, and it was going for 99p. And I thought, I just put a cheeky bid here and I put £1.04, and I won the bid.
Brilliant. It's always good when you can get just one bid and win it. Oh, I can't stand those bidding wars.
Yeah, so I now got 4 games for my Sega Mega Drive now, so that's brilliant. I have to find more room for it now.
That is the problem, and that's what one of the issues I had with the Jaguar machine. It was just sat in a corner, and I don't have anywhere to put things, so I need to have a clear out so that I can get some more space to put my things.
So
what else have you been up to? Anything
well,
else?
Well, I also planning on getting one of those cards for the Commodore Amiga that you slot side of the Commodore Amiga, so you can put games onto discs. Now, there's another way to do it. You could put like a little hard drive thing inside, but I don't fancy opening up my Amiga and putting things inside.
It's really easy to do.
It's really easy to do, but I just don't want to open it up in case I mess it up. So what I've done is I bought 300 discs from eBay.
Oh, Glenn, you're thinking along the same lines as me, because I've been watching those. You've probably bought my auction. No, seriously, I've been just recently. I've been on a massive buying spree on eBay, which we'll go through in a moment. But that's one of the things that I had been watching, because I thought if you get these 300 discs, surely they're going to be full of demos and games. Because they put them on as untested, unused, users blanks. But so, what have they arrived? Have you got?
Yes,
they
arrived in a great big box, just absolutely full of them. And I've tested a few of them. There's quite a lot of full games on them.
Yeah, there will be. They'll all have those lovely crack intros. Maybe we should mention that. But but they'll all have those lovely Scoopex and Red Sector stuff, and all you know, those lovely demos in the beginning.
Yes. So I got that in the preparation of getting this SD card thing, and it's really good, because those discs actually are not cheap if you just buy them from a website. I think 50 discs are going for like 30 quid.
Yeah, yeah.
And well, I think I got this for about 10 quid.
Oh, excellent.
All those discs.
Was it local? Was it a local auction?
Local auction. I might.
Yeah, I mean, was it from Leeds, or did you have to pay delivery?
Oh, I have to pay delivery. Yeah, so I think delivery was about £9. I think it was about £9.
Yeah, but you got 300 discs there, aren't you? So keep you busy.
Yes, it certainly keep me busy. I managed to test a lot of them and got some full games out and put them in a separate box. But there's certain games I want to get for it in the future.
I know Sam's Mr. Sid, he's collecting a lot of Amiga stuff at the minute, and I've seen him tweeting his pictures of his boxed games that he gets. But the problem I have with that is again, all those boxes take up so much space.
It does.
Do you have a dedicated area to them, Glenn? Have you got a lot of boxed Amiga games on shelving, or
well,
where do you keep all your stuff?
Well, at the moment I keep the stuff on top of my cupboard. But there's some good news. Some good news and bad news. My brother's bought a house, and he's moving out. So he has a cupboard in my room, and I said, "Oh, I'll buy this cupboard." And he has this great big cupboard, and what my plan is to put some of my retro stuff in this cupboard. So I've actually got more room now to put even more stuff.
That's good. Yeah. Well, I've got a cupboard that I keep all my retro games in. It used to be my clothes cupboard, but they're just on the floor.
So you iron it and just chuck it on the floor.
I pretty much just wash the clothes, fold them up, and stick them in a basket, and that's it. And all the consoles and computers are all nice and neat on the in the airing cupboard shelves. They're all nice and warm. Just, you know, looking pretty.
I haven't got to that stage yet. I have actually got a separate cupboard that's got my clothes in, so I've not quite got there yet.
I'll get it organised, don't you worry.
So what have you been buying, Anthony?
Right, well, I've got a right list of stuff that I've been buying, and to be honest, Glenn, I'm gonna have to put the brake on, because I'm gonna be seriously skint. But I got some money back which I was going to use to come down to Essex, but unfortunately I didn't get the money back from the gas and the electric until after the event happened. But, you know, I put it to good use, and I've been buying myself some systems. So I've got myself, and I don't know what I had the last time I spoke to you, but I don't think I had the majority of this. I've got a C64.
Yeah.
And I've been having a lot of fun on that, because, well, you know yourself what a brilliant system the
C64 is. Oh, it's brilliant. Have you got the SD card for it?
I've not got the SD card yet. It's something that I'm contemplating. Yeah. But, I mean, I do like loading from tape. I ain't got a problem with it, you know, because I'll put the tape in and I'll go away and do something else and come back. And the C64 is, well, I found really reliable for loading. So pretty much all of the games that I've got on cassette, they all work.
I tell you, so you're very lucky.
I haven't had any problems with it at all.
With my Commodore 64 games, the vast majority of them do work, but some of them just will not load in a billion years.
Ah, right. Well, the next computer that I've got, that is a massive problem with it. And I have mentioned this to you. That's my Oric Atmos.
Ah, yeah.
Now, I got this Oric Atmos off eBay, and they do sell for a lot of money, but I managed to get myself a fully boxed Oric Atmos for £70.
Wow.
And normally they will go for, well, I have seen them go afterwards for £70, and they've said untested, no box, maybe not all the leads as well sometimes. But anyway, I got it, and when it arrived, I sort of plugged it in and I did get a sound out of it, but then I just tested it at work, and then when I brought it home and plugged it in again, it stopped working.
Oh no!
It didn't work. I honestly do not know, but I could not get anything out of it again when I brought it back home. Anyway, I got in touch with a company called Mutant Caterpillar, and Ian there, he said, yeah, no problem, send it down to us, I should be able to fix it. And now I'd seen Mutant Caterpillar before on eBay, because he sells modified Spectrums and Commodore 64s. So you will find him there on eBay. And a massive thanks to him, because he'd... Obviously, I had to pay for it to be fixed, but it was £35, I think, I paid for it to be fixed.
Does that include postage?
No, I had to just pay for the postage as well. But sent it down there, and within the week, it was back working. The service was absolutely brilliant, so I can't recommend Mutant Caterpillar highly enough. You know, if you've got any systems that aren't working, you need someone to look at him. You know, get in touch with them, because the service was brilliant. Now, the only problem I've got with the Oryx is, as we say, the C64, brilliant at loading things. The Oric Atmos, or the other Oryx, because I've actually ended up, Glenn, with three Oryx now.
Why do you end up with three?
I got the Oric Atmos, and then I was actually watching an Oric 48K, an Oric 148K on eBay at the same time, and I ended up getting that. And then later, I noticed that someone was selling an Oric 16K, and they were saying, oh, there's no leads with it, it's untested, but it was going for £20. So I thought, for £20, I'll risk it, because, you know, it'll just make a nice ornament if it don't work. But for £20, if it works, you know, that's pretty good. I got it, and it worked.
Well, that's good, that.
So both the Oric 16 and Oric 116K and the Oric 148K both work. The one I did want to work didn't for very long. But what I've got to say about them, Glenn, is if you've never owned one, you know, don't go pushing loads of money out to try and pick one up, because they are the most unreliable machines, and I've not managed to get any three of them to load a game yet. I spent two nights trying to get them to load games off tapes, and they'll start to load. One did load and crashed, so it hadn't loaded it properly. But no, I've got about 10 games on cassette for it, and I've tried from the PC as well, and they just won't load a thing. Terrible systems. I forgot how bad they were.
Were they like that when you had them when you were a kid?
I'll be honest, I can't I can't really remember. I think I did used to struggle a little bit with them. But it may well be the cassette recorder that I've got. So I'll try and pick another one up off eBay and give it another try. But, you know, I've got a sort of very strong bond with that Acorn, with the Auric Atmos, because that was my first machine. So it's just great to have one and have it there boxed and that. I mean, if I can get it to work, that would be brilliant. But I mean, to be honest, emulation is the way to go with them, because you've got no problems then. You're not struggling with any tapes, or it just loads in and works first time.
You might be able to get an SD card for it.
I don't think it's... No, I've had a quick look, and because with it being such a rare system, I mean, unless you know any of the listeners know and they can give me a pointer towards something like that, it would be nice, but I don't think I'd spend any more money on those, because I threw enough money at, you know, getting them. So yeah. I don't think it's worth spending them. I mean, one of the other machines that I've got is the... I've picked up an Amiga 600,
which
was boxed, and I got it for $52.50.
Did it come with the games?
Now, it only came with a couple of games. It came with Putty, which is a pretty good game. I quite enjoy that. And have you played Putty?
Putty? I have to say, I might have played it, I might not.
It's kind of like a little... It's almost like a bit of a puzzle type game in some ways. You this little piece of putty, and you can stretch in certain directions, and you know, you've got to avoid things, and you can flatten yourself down and swallow enemies, and it's quite an entertaining game. So I have a
look. Yeah, I should check that one out. Amiga.
But I got that Amiga 600, which was boxed, and that came with Putty and Jeff Crammond's Grand Prix. And
something
else with it. I can't remember what else came with it, Glenn. But I picked what I then did was I looked on eBay, and there was someone selling a compact flash card for the 600. You just mentioned it earlier, and that was a 4 gig card, and it already had Workbench and I think pretty much every game you could think of on it, and it cost me £22.
Yeah.
So I thought, right, I'll get that. And I'll fit it in, and it just works straight away. I just fit it straight into the little IDE socket, and it just worked straight off. But the only issue I've got, and this is why the A1200 is better for this, is that there's not enough RAM in it to run all those games. So I've got a RAM card on the way. I think that was only about £20 for that. So it's pushed the price of it up a little bit. But what happened, Glenn, was this auction I missed out on because I got outbid.
Oh.
And it turned out, about a week later, I got this second chance thing through on emails, and I've never even had this second chance thing off eBay. And I thought, what is this? And it had gone for a higher amount. I can't remember what it was. Maybe it was £60, £65. And it turned out that the person who bought it was in America. And then obviously the seller found out that he was going to have to pay £100 to send it to America. So I think he must have thought, sod that, because he actually got some negative feedback. But he must have thought, sod that, I'm just not sending it. And he passed it on to me for the bid that I'd put on it. And when I looked, it actually sold, because I got an external drive with it as well. It actually sold that external drive separate for £30.
Wow.
So I got that external drive that he would have got £30 for, along with the Amiga 600. So I didn't get too bad a deal, really.
Yeah, that's really, really good. So the card you're talking about, is it the one that you just slot into the Amiga on the side? Or is it the one the Amiga?
It's not. It's the internal one. So you get a little cable with it, and you plug it into the socket, and then obviously you have to remove the case and put it all back on. But I just put it in, it just worked.
I suppose that I should really look into that, but I just don't want to touch my Amiga. I paid quite a bit for it.
Yeah, I mean, if you do, just get one that's already prepared, because I think you can buy the adapters separate, and then you have to prepare the compact flash card yourself, and I think that's probably what the real hassle is. So obviously, with this already being done, I just literally plugged it in and it booted up straight away.
Yeah,
but you know, when that memory arrives, it'll work much better. So I'll give you a report back on that.
Hello, Mr. Sid here. If you're after some retro gaming goodness, then you have come to the right place. From the Speccy to the Sega Master System, Capcom to Codemasters, and Space Invaders to Space Harrier, it's all covered in the UK's number one retro gaming podcast, The Retro Asylum.
Now, some of the games that I've been playing recently, obviously when I got the Amiga, it reminded me of my favourite Rainbow Islands. So I've been playing Rainbow Islands a bit. And because I've been doing a bit of recording for Swaney as well, obviously this it'll have been played by the time this is played. I did a little review of the arcade version as well. But it surprised me because I thought, after this, I'm going to have a look at it on some of the other machines. And I had a look at it on the 8-bits. And it was... Have you played it on the Spectrum, Glenn?
I played the Spectrum and Commodore 64 one, the Amiga and the Atari ST one.
Right, right. Because the Spectrum one, I was quite amazed with it. It was really, really playable.
Yeah, but the one thing that always puts me off with Spectrum ones is the colour clash.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, that's something...
It still has that colour clash.
Yeah, you just have to accept that. That's just how the Spectrum is. That's just how it is. But that's why I was just so... I was amazed by... It's not the graphics, and that's what a lot of this retro gaming stuff is about. It's not the graphics, is it? It's the gameplay, the pick-up-and-play appeal that the retro systems had. You know, you're not in it for the Call of Duty realistic, you know, models and amazing effects. It's the gameplay, and the gameplay on that game, it was amazing. I thought it was an absolutely spectacular effort for a Spectrum game.
And the sprites look very nicely drawn.
Yeah, yeah.
On the Spectrum game, such as the Commodore 64, it does look... It does look a bit more blockish.
It does, and
if you know what I mean.
I know exactly what you
but
mean.
But that also plays brilliant as well.
Yeah. I think I'm gonna go with the Spectrum on that one. I think it was just because it impressed me so much that the Spectrum could achieve such a quality arcade conversion. It was just brilliant. Another one that I've been playing as well, I did a similar sort of thing with Salamander, and that was very good on the C64. Have you played Salamander on the C64?
Salamander?
Yeah, it's a spin-off of Gradius, horizontal shooting up. Shoot 'em up, although it does turn into a vertical shoot 'em up.
Oh, no, it's not. I think it's a different game. It's not that game you mentioned about. It's a different game I played, but there's a scroll 'em up on the Commodore 64. I forgot what it's called. It mentions the name, I remember. I think it's something Cats.
Something Cats. No.
Something like that.
No, that one doesn't ring a bell. But check out Salamander, because I played that in the arcade, and that was one of my favourites. Again, that's been on the recent arcade music episode. But I was impressed with that on the C64, because the graphics from the opening level are actually pretty good and faithful to the arcade, and the music on the C64 is good as well. Now, I tried that on the Spectrum, and that was terrible. It really was terrible. All the graphics were just white graphics, and it just didn't seem to do it much justice at all. But the next game, though, Glenn, that I've been looking at, you're going to love it. Can you guess what my next game is going to be? It's a game.
Is it an egg?
Yes.
And on one system he goes around a maze, and another system he pushes blocks around and hits penguins.
Are you a mind reader?
I think I could guess this one.
Yeah, I think you can guess this one.
Quick snacks.
You love it, don't you, Glenn? You just love it.
I love the Commodore 64 one, but everybody turns around and goes, "No, it's dreadful. The game's horrible." I went, "No, give it a chance. It's a really good game. Well, I loved it as a kid."
I think you're actually going to be quite happy with me then, because I did like it. I did like it. It's a completely different game to the Spectrum version, but I liked it. And C64 version is a bit like, it reminded me of a sort of, it's almost like a Pac-Man type thing, isn't it?
Yeah, you go around and you collect these fluffies and you put these fluffies into a dungeon. And he had these enemies that come round after you, like there's like a great big monstery thing with a massive nose. There's a spider. I believe there's something. There's a fish that lays starfish. And when I was a kid, I always thought it was poo it laid. You had to try and avoid it.
Avoid the poo.
But one thing I did like is when you get to the edge of the castle, you had like a net, and these fruits and these medals and these things come out, and you got to collect these fruits and stuff. And you every time you see a Dizzy Ball, you got
to
get
it. Bonus level. It's like a bonus level, isn't it?
It's the bonus stage.
That came on,
it's
and
really...
I just finished straight away. I didn't know what to do. Oh, I didn't have any instructions.
Yeah,
so
did you let a Dizzy fall into the water?
I must have done.
Let one Dizzy fall into the water, that's it. So if you see a Dizzy come out, get it. Because if you miss that, that's it. And you've got to get them all.
I had no instructions and yeah. I've never played it. So this bonus thing came on and something flew through the air and then it just said...
Yeah, it might have been a Dizzy that flew out into the water. There's a shark underneath and he goes, help! And his hand's like that and it goes, oh.
Yeah, but the Spectrum version is like, as I said, it's like... a game that I used to have called Pengy, and you were a penguin, and you had to run around. It was like a maze of ice blocks, and then there were these, I think they were called snow bees, that and they were just little blobs with beaks that chased you around the maze, and you had to kick the blocks into them. So the version on the Spectrum reminded me of that, although then it's got those sort of puzzle element to it where you've got to collect certain things. And you can only go around the screen in a certain way because of the way the blocks are laid out. I guess that might be its version of the bonus level. But I've only quickly played those, Glenn, but I thought I'm going to have to look at these because it gets mentioned so much on the show and you get ribbed so much about it.
Yeah, Andy doesn't like Quick Snacks because he said the music was horrible and the Spectrum music was great. And he said that game probably was another game but they just stuck Dizzy in.
Could.
And I think that's a bit harsh saying.
Yeah, it could be true,
actually really good game.
I prefer the Spectrum game. I'm going to go with Andy. But I'm not saying that I dislike the C64 one because, I'll play it again. I'll probably play it again this weekend. So what games have you been playing recently then, Glenn?
Retro gaming wise, I've been testing out my Amiga games. And I managed to find some games that worked, some games that didn't work. And I thought I had Speedball 2.
Yeah.
Oh, that was really good.
Yeah, Ice Cream.
Do you remember that? It was like a football game.
I've got it on the Mega Drive, but that's what I used to play on the Amiga. Brilliant games, the Bitmap Brother games. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that was brilliant.
What else have you been playing on it?
And I also been playing... what game is it? It's Alien Breed 2.
I'm not sure if I played the second. I did have the first one.
It's funny because you start off a level like you're on some kind of launch pad or something. You have these helicopters and things chasing after you and just fire bullets all over you. And it goes, warning, warning, you're going to die. And you just die straight away. I also been playing another game, Magic Pocket.
Yeah, it's got the Betty Boo music in it, Betty Boo music at the beginning, hasn't it?
Well, I actually done a review on that game by my own camcorder. I did it like what Steve Benway does. He has like a camcorder and he camcorded it with the monitor. Yeah. And it was funny because when the game starts up, you think, is this a girl's game? Like all little stars.
Yeah. Betty Boo.
you just think, is this a girly game? You know, it's and when you play it, then it turns into like a normal game.
It's got that.
You know, when it puts his hands in his pockets and throws those whirlwinds out.
I was just about to mention that. It's got that little dodgy bit on it where he puts his hand in his pocket and a bulge comes up. So is this suitable for children?
And another game I've been playing on Amiga, Project X.
Oh, that is such a hard game. I got completely embarrassed with that game at Wolverhampton. I don't think they ever aired it anywhere, but we had a little sit down. Right, okay, let's see who can get the most points before they lose a life on Project X, and I'd not played it before, so I think I can't even remember if I went. No, I don't think I went first. There was someone before me, but I sat down to it, and the game starts, and the first wave of enemy come in. I moved in too close and they shot me straight away.
Oh no!
I lasted about 3 seconds. I think I scored 60 points.
Well, the idea of that game is you got to destroy a wave of enemies and then you get a power up.
Yeah.
And you got to collect your power ups because if you don't, later on it's going to be impossible to get through the level because you can't get through with a basic gun. You've got to power up your guns so you get more powerful guns so you can get through the level much easier. Yeah. But there's this enemy that comes later on, the enemy. It looks like some kind of bacteria or something. And if you don't go around the screen, it just fires a load of red balls at you.
Yeah, it's like a big sphere with tumours on it. And yeah, it flies
just
round and
balls
round.
Firing
yeah.
at you. And I don't know how you destroy that. I'm just going around the screen so it doesn't shoot
right.
at me.
I have been further past that. I think literally you just have to avoid it until it disappears. At least that's what I did. I'm sure there'll be other people shouting at us and going, no, this is what you do.
Yeah, you can destroy it, but there's a way to do it. I also been playing Flimbo's Quest on the Commodore 64.
Okay. Have you ever played that one? What's that about, Glenn?
It's kind of complicated. You're this little boy that goes around like platforms, and you have to collect certain items, and you have to go back to the shop, and that's how you do it. I remember a friend playing it years and years ago, and he was showing me properly how to play it. But I played a bit of it, and all I do is just run around the screen and shooting all the enemies.
I'm just looking at the title screen for it online now, actually, and the little character in it reminds me of a game on the Amiga called Marvin's Marvelous Adventure. I bought that when it first came out, and at first I wasn't sure what to think of it, and then I played it a bit longer and it really grew on me. There was all sorts of nifty moves you could do. I can't remember a lot about it as we speak now, Glenn, but I'll have to play it again because I remember being so impressed with it that I wrote to the software publishers and told them how much I loved the game, and I just put please do more, and then they wrote back to me and sent me a t-shirt with Marvin's Marvelous Adventure on it.
A little bit off topic. I remember as a kid, I used to love Lego. Yep. And I used to send them a letter saying how much I love Lego. And it's really nice when they actually do reply to you, acknowledge that they got the letter. Because they could easily just ignore the letter.
Oh, yeah, of course they could do. And on the flip side of that, this is off topic. We're going off topic here now. But I once sent a complaint letter into Wheat Crunches. Because I bought some Wheat Crunches, tomato flavour. And I was like, I swear I got these tastes of nothing. They used to taste so tomato-y, and just like, what have they done? So I wrote a complaint to him saying that I'd bought these packet of crisps, and they just tasted of nothing. And they sent me, I think it was a 10 or 15 pound voucher back to get Wheat Crunches. I could buy quite a lot of Wheat Crunches for that. But I never
just. Could you only buy Wheat Crunches with it?
I think so. But I never used it anyway. I don't know what happened to it. Sometimes it's worth telling people that you really enjoyed things, and sometimes it's worth complaining.
Now, another game I've been playing. There's this game on the Amiga, and I'm trying to remember its name. You look like a wolf or something. It's called something Ice.
Fire and Ice.
That's it. You look like you were some kind of wolf or something. It's like a platform game.
I remember playing that.
Yeah, I've been playing a bit of that, but I haven't got far on it. That was another game I tested. It worked on my Amiga.
I'm gonna have to try that one again, Glenn, because I remember that I used to play that as well. But you know, it's such a long time ago that it's quite difficult to recall exactly what happened in the game. So I'll have to get that one. On the emulator or actually on the Amiga.
Yeah, and another game I've been playing, I've been playing Theme Park on the Amiga, because I actually got Theme Park, and it actually comes with like, I think it's about four discs. It's the Amiga 1200 version. So one thing that absolutely amazes me about that version, it has the intro. You know, he has that boy that comes in and goes, "Oh, I'm bored." And he goes, "Bored?" And this man, dodgy man with a hat comes up and goes, "Come to my theme park."
I don't know if I've seen that bit, Glenn, because if I remember correctly, you needed to have a certain amount of memory in your machine for it to fully work. You could play the game if you only had, say, 1 meg. But if you wanted to see all of it, I think you had to have, like, 2 meg and above. I'm not sure.
Yeah, well, I got Amiga 1200. Yeah. So probably that has at least 2 meg in. Right. And it's funny because I remember seeing that. I think, wow, they have the video intro on the Amiga version, the Amiga 1200 version at least, of Theme Park. Yeah. The Super Nintendo version, it doesn't have that. That's what spoils it for me.
I think I must have had that version. Maybe I had my Amiga 500 when
I got that. Yeah, there was a 12. There was actually an AGA version, and there was a normal Amiga version, and the Amiga 1200 version's better.
Right. Well, I know I had a hard drive for my Amiga 500 as well, but I'm sure when I got my copy, there was an issue that I don't think the sound worked or something like that because there wasn't enough memory, but you could play the game.
When I bought my Amiga, it did came with games, and I got this game called Worms. And I thought, wow, I must really play this game called Worms.
You like your Team 17 games, don't you?
Yeah.
We've got Bread. And this, funnily enough, actually, Project X as well. Team 17 are based in West Yorkshire, aren't they?
I never knew that.
Yeah, they're in Wakefield. When I was younger, I went to two offices, and I don't even know why I went there, but my dad took me to Team 17... And they were in Wakefield. And I can't remember where else he took me. I don't know whether he took me to the Acorn offices or whether it was Superior Software or somewhere. I don't know where it was. But I remember when I got my Acorn Electron, he took me there. And it was when I'd first seen discs. Because when I got my Acorn Electron, I got this 3.5-inch disc drive. And he took me to this office. I don't know whether it was Acorn Soft or Superior. And I remember buying a copy of Raven Skull there. And then we went to a shop over the road, and I got my first set of discs there. And when I received my Amiga 600, there was a disc with it in the actual plastic wrapper, which I actually tweeted, and because I was like so impressed that... It took me right back to that day when I got that first box of Acorn Electron discs in their little plastic wrappers. Anyway, wow. I've interrupted you, Glenn. what was it you were saying?
Yeah. Well, that was interesting to know about Team 17. Well, when I originally bought these games, the guy says they have not come with manuals. And I thought, oh, it doesn't matter. And I just thought later on, oh, yeah, the Amiga games were known to have these manuals, you know, to come up and says, right, what's on this page? What worm, yep. You know? And this thing came up on Worms saying, what's on column A minus something like column A, G, and 5? And I'm like, oh, I've no idea. Anyway, I actually went online and actually got the whole sheet of it on my phone. There's about a few pages of it, and it's just a line of numbers and stuff. And you've got to type that in just for the game to work. And if you get it wrong, the game just freezes.
Yeah, sometimes they give you like 3 chances or something, don't they? But Jeff Crammond's the same. It's got you get the manual with it. And when it starts, it says, what is word 5 of paragraph 3 on page 17? Now, the first game I remember having one of those was Manic Miner, and I've got a copy of Manic Miner for the Oric, and that's got if you open the inlay on that, it's got a grid which goes from, say, I can't remember exactly, but goes from, say, A to H and 1 to 20, and each of the little squares is a different colour. And then when that starts up, if you can ever get it to load, when that starts up, it then asks you what for 3 different colours and gives you an A4, H5. So yeah, they've been around for quite a long time, those sort of checks. But that's the beauty of the cracked versions. Exactly.
Well, I heard that some games, you know, well, the games that didn't have manual protection codes on, if you copy the disc, somehow they'll know that you copy the disc and they take bits out of the game.
Right.
If it's known to be copied.
Right, well, I was reading a little bit about the copying of the Amiga discs, and I know I did try to copy Rainbow Islands once, even though I actually owned it. I had a copy of it, but I decided to see if I could make a backup of it because it was, with it being my favourite game, I didn't want anything to happen to it. So I actually resorted to using what they call Cyclone Copier. I don't know, have you heard of the Cyclone Copier? Yeah, a little
bit
of hardware that goes into the back of the Amiga. And I don't know the technical ins and outs of it really, but I think it then gave you the Amiga slightly more control over the drive or something to be able to read specially recorded bits. I think the software companies could somehow control the disc better and record things in a certain way, so that if you tried to copy it, it degraded the data so that it didn't copy properly. But somehow the Cyclone Copier attempted to get around that, but even with that, I couldn't copy Rainbow Islands. There was always you'd use a bit of software called Xcopy, and it'd be so annoying because what it did was it'd go through and it'd show you it copying each block, and the blocks would change different colours as it copied each block. And anyway, no, I could never get that to copy. So I know what you mean. They did used to be able to do something that meant that if you tried to copy it, the data degraded and the Amiga couldn't read it.
Do you know, we've actually been talking for 47 minutes.
Yeah, I know.
Does time fly?
I've got 54 on mine, so I think I must have gone through a time warp.
Tonight we're going to paint a picture of success. Peopled with characters who have imagination, confidence in themselves, faith in the future, and a very positive attitude to life.
Now, this is not the movie Asylum, but we made a bit of exception here because it is copyright related. We're going to talk about a very famous and good film, Micromen.
Sinclair and Akon. Two big names in, you know, our 8-bit years.
They certainly are. And I'm really surprised how the story went through. It's a really great film. And I never realised that the guy who called Chris Curry worked with Clive Sinclair over the years to develop the TV, the little pocket TV and the calculator and the little radio. And this is like the beginning of the story, basically. They've developed all these things, and they then suddenly developed this watch. And then they found out there were some problems with this light watch. And Sinclair went into a bit of financial difficulty. So he went to the government, and the government put some money into his business. And they're basically running his business. And then they developed this, like, television, and it wasn't successful. And then basically the government says, right, that's it. We're getting rid of it. And this is where the story really begins.
It's the National Enterprise Board, isn't it, who from the government come in and they sort of save his business, really, but say that, you know, you must produce these things and produce returns for the taxpayer. But old Clive Sinclair there, he's got this obsession, hasn't he, Glenn? Well, he's got this obsession with one thing that he wants to do.
Electric cars. He says, no, the government doesn't want to spend money on electric cars. We need more investment.
There is no more investment, Clive. It's absolutely brilliant. You've got to watch it, really, to fully appreciate it. What's the name of the guy the actor that plays Clive Sinclair?
He looks exactly like Clive Sinclair. He even sounds like him.
He's absolutely brilliant acting. It really is.
Well, if you listen to Clive Sinclair back then, and Clive Sinclair on that Micromen, you believe it's Clive Sinclair.
Oh, absolutely. It's Alexander Armstrong plays Clive Sinclair. Probably known from that TV show, Pointless. Have you seen the pointless show on TV?
He's not the presenter,
yes, he's the
is
presenter
he?
On that. It's Alexander Armstrong.
How did he get him to look like Clive Sinclair?
Absolutely, transformation, isn't it? Yeah, it's Alexander Armstrong who is the host on the Pointless show.
But he's got completely different hair.
you can see on the show that it's like a bald thing that goes over and puts the ginger hair around the side. But it is an absolutely brilliant transformation, and the acting in the show is absolutely spot on. And the way that they've dated it and everything to put it into that era with the clips from all the different shows is amazing. But yeah, it starts off, doesn't it, Glenn, with the government stepped in and given him this money, and they produced the pocket television, and then
it wasn't selling well.
and they pulled the funding.
It's time to break this business up. We're calling in the receivers,
and they basically then give Clive Sinclair £10,000. That sounds like nothing today, but that was quite a lot back in 1979, 1978, when this would occur.
Oh, yeah, it'd be a hell of a lot of money. So what was he using that money for, Glenn? What did he then go on to do? Because when the National Enterprise Board pulled that money, he had another plan in place, didn't he?
Yes, he did. There was some place at Cambridge University. He, had a department there. And before the company... The government folded it. He said to Chris Curry in the Rolls Royce, "Right, I need you to go there and sort everything out and get ready for me to come in." And Chris Curry went, "Well, we've been planning on this microcomputer." He goes, "Well, it's only some hobbyists and stuff." He was like throwing it out, poo poo to that. Oh, no. And then there was another scene when Chris Curry was in a pub with Clive Sinclair. And he had an argument with one of his technicians. Do you remember that? Beforehand. And he says, "Well, I have no grudges now." And that he was one of the main technicians.
It did show that he had, or at least it portrayed in the film, that Clive Sinclair did have this sort of short temper, didn't he? Where he would just rant
he'd
and
throw objects
things.
Around.
Now, it's interesting, Glenn, because before... We started recording this. I did just quickly look, because it makes you wonder about these documentaries, just how much of it is true. But I did quickly look before we started recording this, and I did find something that said Clive Sinclair wasn't too happy about how he was portrayed in it, even though it did actually say that they were consulted about everything that went on in this documentary. Because obviously they're doing a good documentary here about people who are still alive. So, you know, they must have had input and been asked about it. It said that he wasn't too happy, that he thought it made Clive look bad, and to some extent it made the pair of them look a little bit daft. But was it Steve Ferber? Steve and the other guy, one of the other guys who worked on creating the BBC, they both said that it was a very fair portrayal of all of them.
The facts were correct. Chris Curry and Clive Sinclair.
Yeah.
Basically, they sat down and then they met the Austrian guy. I forgot his name. Do you know his name?
It's Hermann. Hermann Hauser. That's interesting as well, because Hermann comes into the discussion and he's not received very well by Clive, is he?
Well, he didn't exactly use the best line, did he? He sat down and goes, The watch.
But it didn't.
40 components in your watch.
He says, "Ah, yes, the watch, but it didn't work, did it?" No, he didn't really start off on the right foot.
I was just talking about the importance of elegance in innovative design.
Oh, as with your black watch?
Oh, yes.
But your watch didn't work properly. Elegance and functionality, no?
Oh, you just saw the embarrassment with Chris Curry, when he said that.
but then Clive comes back with a quip about the course that Herman's doing, because he's doing something on oxidisation. So he says, "Well, of course, we didn't go to university, but it must be very interesting watching things rust."
Yes, yes, I remember that. But then it came to the part where there was Chris Curry and Clive Sinclair sitting down, having some kind of meal in a posh, in his posh house with nice posh music in the background. And this is when Chris Curry was trying to get into Clive's head, look, this computer is a good idea. And basically, he says, it's amateur, it's rubbish, and we haven't got the funds to waste. You know, he was going on like that, because we've got to put money in useful stuff, like the electric car. And he goes, oh, not the electric car.
Yes.
He goes, I beg your pardon.
he belittles the electric car, doesn't he? There's a comment that he comes out with, and Clive, oh, he is not happy.
He's throwing him out the house.
This is Clive's baby, is this? There's no way he's going to take that. So, throws him out of the house.
It basically throws him out of the house because of that. I don't know if any of that is true or just made up for the documentary, but...
Well, I'm not sure. It'd be nice to look these details up, but certainly the site that I looked at said that it had been stated that the telephone incident was true and some of the other incidents were true, so it may well be believable.
But the funny thing is, his wife came back in the room and said, okay, because he'll be back tomorrow. And he never returned, did he? He was then playing chess with Herman, and he says, I don't know if this was in the correct sequence, but then Herman says, are you a prawn or a bigger piece on the board? And he goes, then checkmate.
He does, yeah.
And then he goes, you haven't done it properly. It's not checkmate. Well, and he goes, oh, I don't have to play chess.
It's quite, that bit is quite clever, because Herman is, you know, obviously saying, are you a pawn or are you a king as they're playing chess, and aiming that towards Chris to put that thought in his head, you know, that you've got all these skills and you've got this idea, why don't you put yourself in charge? And the way that he says, I don't really know the rules. It's like, well, you know, don't play by the rules is what he's saying, isn't he? Go ahead on your own. You can see that he's putting this idea towards Chris Curry. Very clever bit, I think.
And then this is when it all began. Because it's funny, like, was the next scene when they went to, like, a bank and they went, well, yeah, can I have £10,000, please? And the man looked a bit dopey. He went, which university went to? And Herbert went, that one. He went, oh, very good.
Yeah, he points to Cambridge.
Now, can you imagine doing that in today's bank? going to TSB and go, can I have, like, a £1,000 loan, you know, £100,000 loan for a house? He goes, which university have you been to? And I went, oh. And just make some rubbish stories about my wage and my job and all that.
Things are a lot different these
days.
Can't
believe he could get away with it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously this is a documentary and I don't know how much they shortened it down. But, you know, things were a lot simpler in the olden times, Glenn.
And then it really all began. Because he went and found Steve and the rest of the gang at the university and said, these people know how to program, these people know how to make systems. And it's really good how Chris Curry and Herman found these people to build the computers. But then, do you remember the next part where Clive sat down with the computer magazines and then he went, hang on a minute, these computers are £2,000, £500, why are they so much? And then he went, yes, where's my cheap computer?
There was an article he read that said, in 5 years' time, the computers could be as cheap as £99. And he said, poppycock! We're going to make them within months.
Yeah, it's great how all that is set out. And then, just straight after that, the ZX80 came out. And it's absolutely marvellous how he did it. When you actually buy the computer, you can either buy it built up, you pay more for that, or you could buy it and you could build it up yourself.
Yeah, from a kit. And what happened was, obviously, when he produced that, Acorn managed to grab hold of one, didn't they?
Yeah, they were looking inside it and they just couldn't believe that Clive got there before them.
And but Herman says, "Oh, don't worry about it. He's made his move first. We can do better." But do you remember when they were actually having a look at the innards and they tried out the keyboard? The comment that I think it was Steve Ferber came out with.
Jesus, it's like trying to read Braille through a pair of gardening gloves.
Yeah.
Right, let's just take a quick break for a moment. I'd like to announce the site news for this episode. We'd like to say a massive, massive thanks to our site sponsors and many, many thanks to Dino Dini, who's sorted us out with our hosting for the year. We really, really do appreciate that because we need to pay for the hosting for the podcast itself and also for the website. So any donations that people can give really gratefully received. So thanks to Dino Dini, to Tony Day, to Michael Keith, and Mr. Sid and myself have donated as well. If you can help out in any way whatsoever, you can donate through the website www.retroasylum.com. There's a button at the bottom there, just click that and it will take you through to PayPal to be able to donate. Thank you very much should you see your way to doing that. Now, other news that we've got, we've had the competition. The September competition was to win a PS1. I mentioned it at the beginning in our little GTA intro that we did there. But it's actually the end of September now, so it's time to announce the winner. So I've got some names in a hat here. I'm going to take one name out. And the person who wins the PlayStation 1... is Jack-O-Lantern 666. Well done. You found yourself a PlayStation 1. Congratulations. Don't worry, there's plenty of chances to win prizes. We're going to be running more competitions, so just keep a listen out on the podcast or on the website and just follow the instructions and you could find yourself winning a great prize. Now, also coming up, we've got the Play Expo in Manchester, and that looks like it's set to be a great event with a lot of retro machines there. Now, that's taking place on the 12th and 13th of October. Check out the website, www.playexpo.net. All the details are on there on how to get there and how to get your tickets. I'm going to be there as long as I can sort out some transport for myself. Also, Swaney will be there, Andy will be there, Damien, Ali, the Retro Hunter, and Glenn are going to be there. So it'd be brilliant if we could, meet some of our listeners there. Just, if you see us wearing our Retro Asylum t-shirts, just stop us and say hi, because we'd love to speak to you all. The other thing we've got going at the moment is the Tell Us About Your Retro Collection. Now, if you want to take part, all you need to do is record maybe a 30-minute section of yourself talking about your retro collection. Tell us the different systems you've got, the games you've got, what your favourites are. Approximately 30 minutes long, 20, 30 minutes, doesn't have to be exact. And if you want to stick that on an upload site, Google Drive, SkyDrive or Dropbox, just drop Andy an email. It's andy@retroasylum.com. And just send one in. We'd absolutely love to hear what things you're collecting and what your thoughts are. Okay, let's go back to the review. I hope you enjoy the rest of the show.
Have you actually seen a ZX80 itself? It's like, it's really, really thin, really small. And you know that grill?
Yeah.
You see on top? That's not even real. It's a sticker. Yeah. He hasn't got a grill on it. You think it's got a grill on it. It's actually a sticker.
Oh, brilliant.
That's not actually a real grill. Oh. But there was one issue with it, though. It flickered. Every time you put some kind of press a button or something, the screen flickers. Well, moving on from that, then the Acorn brought out the Atom. I've never actually seen an Atom in my whole life.
I saw they had an Atom at Wolverhampton when we were there.
Did they?
I didn't really have a good go at it, but yeah, they did have one there. But yeah, they brought it showed them in the programme showing off this Acorn Atom at the show that one of the journalists picked up on comments that that were being made, weren't they? You seem to be putting Clive Sinclair down.
He goes, oh no, it's just simply a superior machine. And then it got onto the part where there was Clive Sinclair sitting down with somebody interviewing from the Sinclair magazine. And it goes, well, he's sitting there saying, well, I predict in the future that there's going to be less people making computers because there's a gold rush now, but then the market eventually will fall. And then he went on to the question about the RAM expansion parts.
Yeah, the wobbly
falling back. Out. And I wondered, he says, well, I've talked to the engineers and a bit of blue tech solves the problem.
Genius. Because the guy from, it was Sinclair User, wasn't it? He says, oh, I'm from Sinclair User. And he says, ah, Sinclair User. You got
my blessing.
Right. And but he was amazed by that, wasn't he? Was that blue tech? That's genius.
You're amazing.
A little bit of blue tech.
Yeah. And
there'll be people who are listening to this who will have owned these machines and they'll have done it. I'm sure they will have done. I mean, I've never owned one of those, but I'm sure there'll be people listening now that will go, oh yeah, I remember the blue tack. Or maybe they came up with a more inventive way of doing it. It'd be interesting to know, wouldn't it, Glenn? You know, if anyone can get on the forums and tell us what they did.
Would it be a bit dangerous, though, use a bit of blue tack on a circuitry board?
I don't think it's conductive, so... No, I think it'd be all right.
All right. I'd be afraid it'd be on
fire. If anyone knows
of
any house fires that happened, do let us know.
And then it went on to the bit about the BBC looking into getting computers into schools and having a computer for the TV programme.
This was the BBC Home Computer Initiative or something like that, wasn't it? If I remember correctly, what had happened is that they'd announced that they were going to do this initiative, and they initially had a company in the Newbury New Brain that was the contender for taking on this contract that the BBC had to push computers into schools.
Yeah, and the very first part of that, Clive rang up Chris Curran, says, let's have a meeting somewhere.
This was the date at this point. I think this was 1980 that this was happening. And yeah, he did. He rang him up to arrange a meeting.
It was funny because you would have thought at one part of the movie, they were sitting in a nice posh bit of his house, a nice candlelit dinner. And I think you would have thought they wouldn't have gone to a very nice posh place to have a nice meeting. No, they went to some kind of greasy cafe in the middle of nowhere. It looks like a middle of the A1 or something. And it looks like a right... Well, what's to say? It looked like the building was going to collapse from outside.
It did. Did you notice what happened there as well, Glenn? That Clive immediately took charge, didn't he?
Oh, yes, he did.
Yeah.
It says, I ordered for you. He says, octail soup. And it says, very nourishing or something like that. There's going to be people said he didn't exactly say that, but he said something in that way. And then they got on to discussing about, Chris, would you work with me to stop this other company getting the BBC contract?
Yeah, he basically said, well, this is very unfair, isn't it, that this one company should be given this... opportunity to push their computers into the schools, and he basically was saying, you know, we should get together and write to the BBC and put our side forward, you know, and work together to get ourselves a foothold.
The other company that you mentioned, they pulled out of the contract of building it. I think he found out on the phone, he was talking to them himself. I remember on the actual film, he was sitting down and goes, he was talking to them, oh, thank you for calling me. And he says, what about this thing? He goes, hang on a minute, have to pull out! And he slammed down the phone and rang straight out.
He gets this phone call and they tell him that, and he immediately goes out, and he must have gone straight down to their offices to meet with them.
And then Clive Sinclair found out it's happened also.
He did, and he oh, yeah.
And he says, oh, he rang, yeah. Ring up ACOM right now, and he rang up, and then he discovered that he went down to the BBC, and he went where?
If you guys have not watched this show, you seriously have to watch it, because you have to see this sort of rivalry taking place and how it's portrayed. Whether, I mean, even if it's not historically 100% accurate, it's just an absolutely superb, entertaining show, isn't it, Glenn?
Oh, it's brilliant. And if you're into your computer and retro gaming history, it's a must-see. Definitely.
So Chris, he gets his foothold on the BBC then, doesn't he?
Yeah, he went down to visit the BBC, and then he spoke to them. And then he came back to his friends and his team at Acorn and says, right, BBC are going to be here in 4 days. 4 days, and they're all...
Yeah.
And he was talking to Herman, actually. No, he wasn't talking to the Acorn crowd. He was actually talking to Herman.
We've got 4 days. And Herman's like, yeah, 4 days? Is it possible?
I love how Herman can trick people.
Absolute genius that happens next is that he phones up the two engineers, doesn't he? He phones Steve and he says, hello, Herman here. And he says, look, we have this to do. We've got 4 days. Is it possible? And his reply is, no, absolutely not. There's no way we can do it. So he puts the phone down, doesn't he? And he phones the other guy, and he says, he asks him, and he says, no, it can't be done. But then he phones them back again, doesn't he? So he phones the other guy back and says, look, it's Herman again, and he says that the other guy said it can be done, and he does this to both of them and fools them into agreeing to do it. Absolutely brilliant.
I like that. Something about Herman, he might not know everything about the computers and everything. He may not. Well, I don't know 100%. But he knows how to talk to people in a way and put them on his side.
Get people moving. And
yeah.
He just knows how to get that momentum going.
Well, the BBC Micro might have been the Sinclair Spectrum. Can you imagine the Sinclair Spectrum in the schools instead of the BBC Micros? That would have been weird.
It did show Clive putting a little BBC logo over the top of the machine, as it, and yeah, his secretaries just sort of smiles and good night.
Yes, but I think if that would have happened, do you think the Spectrum would have been known as the computer that smelled of school, and the games and the things probably would not happened? It could have ruined history for computer games,
well,
if
you
that
know,
would occur.
Thankfully, it didn't, and we've got all these little Rainbow Islands and one not to talk about on the Spectrum.
But do you remember they had the next few days? The Acorn crew were just working day and night, and they looked absolutely shattered when it got to Friday.
They did. It came round to Friday, didn't it? And Chris Curry wakes up and sees all the other engineers sort of slumped over the desks asleep. And obviously, they all have to wake up very quick. And the BBC are arriving at the building, you know, that second they're on their way in.
And it's just, they're here. And there was like Herman and the rest of the gang turn it on, and the computer goes, not working, and a blank screen. What's wrong with it?
He sidetracks them as he's bringing them into the building, yeah, doesn't he, by taking them up to the wrong floor. And then, yeah, oh, sorry, I don't know what I'm doing. Oh, how silly of me. And the next genius bit of Herman's.
It was funny because there they are in the computer room, and they were all like, what's happening? What can we do? And he goes, could it be this wire that connects the clock and the backup system? And he goes, oh, no, don't cut it, because that could cause the system not to work. And he goes, the moment of the birth the cord has to be cut. Something like that.
Yes.
For life, the cord has to be cut. And he goes, no!
Yeah.
And cuts it.
And then, oh, yeah, it snip. And then the noise we all know of the BBC. Beep! Yeah. And it comes on just as they're walking through the door. As I was saying, all we can show you is...
a fully working prototype.
Yeah, you have to watch it to fully take in. So, superb.
It was absolutely funny seeing that, but for some reason I had like a tear in my eye when I see that, because I think, wow, is this how this BBC...
technology.
That's the birth of the BBC. Yeah. That we're seeing in schools.
Yeah. Those moments, I mean, must have felt so good to them. I mean, it must have been... 1 second, absolute blind panic that, you know, these top people from the BBC are about to be here to look at this technology and it's not working. There's nothing on the screen whatsoever. To the next instant of the beep and the Acorn computer prompt is up there and it's all working. The transition from that, what you must have been feeling at one point to the next, must have been amazing. I mean, we have that in computing all the time where you've got a rush job on and it just works at the end. But this is like a pivotal point in, you know, like you say, technology.
But, you know, you have to give these people a lot of credit. Like they know how to make a circuitry board. They know how to program a system. This is way before a lot of other people could have done it. It's absolutely amazing how they did it.
That's one side of things that I don't know, Glenn, and I'd love to know more about the actual hardware and the, you know, how the heck this electricity flows around here and it's resisted by this and then it goes into this. I can't even get that through my head. You know, I can program a computer, but that is just, it's just a mystery to me. Week passes, doesn't it, Glenn? And the phone rings at the Acorn office, and we've seen Clive say, "I'm taking no calls back at his office, only from the BBC."
Only from the BBC.
And then the next thing we get is this phone call coming through for Chris Curry, and he answers, and lo and behold, it's the BBC, and he just has this conversation. Puts the phone down, and on the documentary, the music just starts, and they're all dancing around with the champagne
out,
having a party.
Like a party
because they've got it. And then,
oh, it switches back to Clive Sinclair, and it goes, oh, it's the BBC, and he goes, hello. And then the bunch of swearing that comes out of his mouth, and he throws the phone, and it went right across the room into the other room, smashes through the window. I tell you, if he were really like that in real life, gosh, can you imagine working for him? And then the real computer wars began then.
They did indeed, you know? Because now we've got the ZX80 and we've now got the ZX Spectrum and we're...
ZX81, it went ZX80, ZX81.
Yeah.
And now we're getting into the ZX Spectrum era and... the BBC microcomputer started to come out. And then there was the next bit where basically they were telling Clive, forget about the BBC. We can't produce these fast enough. You know, don't bother about them.
Yeah, there was a lot of delays there, wasn't there, the Sinclair side? Because I remember, this might be going a little bit further on, but with the Sinclair QL, there were massive delays in that he was saying.
Yeah,
oh,
he was over the top.
Oh yeah, absolutely. From what I understand, and the majority of them had faults as well.
Yeah, well, the Sinclair QL that was known as the Quantum Leap, it had these little things for having data coming across. Now I forgot the name of them now. But it's like a little...
Is that the microdrive things?
Yeah, it's like a little microdrive sticks.
Yeah.
And they're known not to be that reliable.
Right. See, I don't
know...
That's
what they're known for.
That's one computer I don't know a lot about at all. I mean, I've seen that... I see the Sinclair QL come up on eBay, and I think, but is it actually worth buying one of those? Because what do you run on it? Can you run... You can't run Spectrum stuff on it, can you?
I don't
know anything about it.
I think you can, but don't correct me on that.
Yeah, I'm sure someone will tell
But it doesn't have the colour clash.
Right, right.
Because I remember seeing some games that are on the QL and the colour clash does not occur. So they must have killed the colour clash on that.
Right.
But they released that system simply because they want to compete against Acorn. That has a higher market system. But then Acorn wanted to compete against Clive Sinclair for bringing out a lower system for a lower price.
That's right. Yeah, they basically Clive brought out the Spectrum, and which sold at about £125, didn't it? Whereas the BBC at the time, which was in all the schools, was vastly more expensive. It was maybe I can't remember the exact price, but it was £300 and odd. So I mean, that pushed it out of the reach of people in the homes, and that's, you know, probably why things like the Spectrum, which were much cheaper, were pushing into the home market. Now, Clive wasn't very happy about some certain aspects of that, though, was he?
Yeah, because there was a part, and we forgot to mention this part.
Yeah,
Anthony, do you remember when Steve Curry walked into a shop and there was somebody showing how a Spectrum was? Oh,
yeah, that's
the
right.
The Spectrum could change colour on the screen. Look at that.
Indeed, yeah.
And she goes, is that all it can do? And he goes, does it play games? He goes, there's loads of games everywhere all around the shop for it.
Now, I've got first-hand experience with this, Glenn, because, Chris Curry has gone into this shop, and there's the sales guy there. He's showing her, oh, this computer can change colours. And there's all these games. And literally there was like massive long, like four rows of shelves full of ZX Spectrum games. And I've been there at the time, and I could go into Boot, and there would be exactly that. There'd be row after row of ZX Spectrum games, and then there'd be loads of rows of C64 games, and then there would be, just as they portrayed it, a little shelf at the bottom that would have maybe, you know, 20, 30 BBC and Electron games. And there'd be absolutely hundreds of Spectrum and C64 games. And obviously, Chris Curry's gone into this shop and seen this, and he's obviously thought, well, hang on a minute, people are wanting games. People want a system to play games on. We're in the education market. And he's obviously picked up on this, and that's what happens. He thinks we need to produce a system to compete against Clive, you know, to try and take some of his market share from the ZX Spectrum. And he does the opposite, doesn't he, Glenn?
Yeah, well, Clive Sinclair was walking around and goes, games, games, all I hear is like games. Yeah. I am known for the person who brings you Jet Set Willy! And he absolutely went berserk.
He does swear, doesn't he? Because he's talking to two of his workers, and he says, a lifetime of work, and all my machine's known for is Jet Set Effing Willy.
And he goes, God, they're going to have a game that's going to have me as a knighthood next. And they went, oh, congratulations. The secretary came up, you'll be knighted. Oh, right.
Yeah, so they basically both go the opposite way, because Clive decides to go and bring this machine out that's better for education and business. And that's the QL. And Chris Curry goes the other way and goes back and convinces his team that they need to bring out the Acorn Electron to compete against the Spectrum.
Now, there was a chat on the film about why we're going down market. Should we be aiming for the 16-bit? Should we be aiming for a more powerful system? And this is when I agree with them. I think that's the way they should have gone. I think this was the big mistake Chris Curry did.
The market got into difficulties at that time as well. But yeah, the engineers were saying, oh, we should be looking at, and Herman was saying as well, oh, we should be looking at developing the 16-bit machine, not going backwards. But he managed to convince them, because supposedly there was this deal with W.A. Smith that was going to take, I can't remember the figure, something like 20,000 machines, wasn't it? Something like that. They were going to buy all these Acorn Electron machines, and he put his faith in that going through. And look, really, I think what had happened is, when you look at it, is that they just got, it was too late in the day. The Spectrum had been out for a while, and they decided to bring this out to compete against it. And they also had some delays, I believe, in the manufacturing and stuff, which meant that they missed Christmas. And as you see in the documentary, what actually happens is, with the faith in this contract, everything that happens, W.A. Smiths don't take up these machines, and they end up shows them all stacked up in a warehouse. None of them have shifted, and you know, it's a real shame. I mean, the Akon Electron was the machine that I really grew up with, and that's what got me into programming.
I think the Oliver twins, I think somebody from a school taught them, and the Oliver twins said the BBC Micro were brilliant to program on.
It absolutely was, and it was because of the built-in assembly that it had that made it so easy to produce programs in assembly language.
Now, let's move on to what happened to the QL. Well, then there was Clive, wanted to build this computer to compete against the Akon computer, and here he is in the show saying, "We got this new computer, and it's for business, and look, we're much cheaper than the rest. We shipped in 28 days. And they turned around and said, you're crazy. We're nowhere near finished this yet. I said, yes, you will finish it by that date. And this is the mistake that Clive Sinclair did. He rushed that computer so much, it had a return. I think it just so unreliable. It had a high return rate. And I think that ruined Clive Sinclair and the computer business. He built a system, he rushed it out that badly that it was a bit bad for the reputation of the system. That's what it comes across to me as. But I think what really did it for Clive Sinclair, there was another part of the film. There he is sitting in this, What is it, like a white spaceship car? And he goes, "Put more power into this."
That was the Sinclair C5 that he was developing, and they pumped so from you
12
know watching the documentary so much
pound.
Money.
Oh. He said 12 million pound for this. He said one of these main people, and they came up to him and talked about the computers are being rushed out. He says, "Well, get it fixed then. And get more people." And I said, "No, we need more time." You know. And this was the problem with Clive Sinclair. I think he didn't care about the QL, really. He cared about his little baby, his C5. And I bet Clive Sinclair's going to complain to me now, say, "No, no, it's not true.
Well, I mean, they did come out, didn't they? But they just, no one was interested.
What do you think to the C5?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's such a small little thing, isn't it? I mean, if you watch the end of the documentary, that little bit that they put in at the end, it shows him basically going down this, was it on a dual carriageway?
Yeah, with all these
and
lorries.
He's being passed by trucks and cars and all these lorries going past him.
He got passed by Microsoft and Hewlett-Packard and IBM. And it says by the end of 1985, the Americans dominated the market. They flooded their stuff into the UK.
There is actually a website, if you look at it, it's SinclairZX.com, and it says Sinclair Research, and I don't know, I mean, I don't know much about this, but, I mean, is this Clive Sinclair still trying to bring out his little electric cars? Because I looked on this, and it does say Clive Sinclair is a British-born entrepreneur. It's got all the details of this in, but the dates go back a little on the website now. It says copyright 2010, but there's like this little it's only two wheels again, but I think I've watched a video of this, and it's like a two wheel little thing, like it's a bike, but you sit in it,
it shelters you,
and you sat in like a little pod, and it balances itself, so as you drive along it balances itself on two wheels.
I don't know, I think Clive Sinclair has to give up on transport. It looks a bit too silly for me. And that car looks, people say it was hell way ahead of its time, but I have my personal view, it was never going to be a success, even in today's world. It goes like 15 miles per hour, and it's just,
it's not going to work.
It just wasn't going to work. I don't know what he was thinking at the time. Clyde Sinclair's probably going to tweet me or tell me, no, you're talking rubbish, but that's my personal view. It's rubbish.
Yeah, well, I'm with you, Glenn. But you know, all credit to him. All these guys that are covering this documentary are absolute geniuses. And we've got the computers that we've got known love thanks to them.
And they contributed a lot to the computers and the computer industry in this country because, you know, without that, we'd not have the ZX Spectrum and you would not have the BBC Microwave. We learned all the assembly languages on. And people go, yeah, but the BBC Microwave is like a school computer. The world would have existed without them. Yeah, but look at the Oliver Twins. They made marvellous games. They learned how to do assembly languages and all sorts of stuff on a BBC Micro.
Absolutely brilliant. Well, I've loved talking about it, so I hope that everyone's enjoyed listening to that. It's difficult to get hold of a copy of this, Glenn, because the BBC, they actually created this documentary, but they don't sell it.
It's bad, isn't it?
I actually bought a copy off eBay, and it's actually being sold by someone who's got copies of it from the actual production company that produced it. You know, I mean, whether that's true, but I mean, certainly when I put my copy in the DVD, it's got a white label on the front with the name of the production company, and it comes up with the usual sort of, you know, like clapperboard things and the clock at the beginning for the timing for it to start. So, you know, I'm willing to believe that that's genuine. But I mean, that seemingly maybe, unless, you know, you go another route, maybe the only way to get an actual physical copy on DVD. So, I mean, I'd love to have a petition to the BBC to actually get this released officially, because it is such a fantastic documentary, so well done, so entertaining, and such an important, you know, section in the history of computing that I think it deserves to be out there officially.
It certainly does deserve to be out there, because I really enjoyed it, and there are people who are into the computers who have not seen it. I may be wrong, I may be right, but I believe Andy has not seen this. I'm really surprised being a Spectrum man.
Well, Andy, get yourself a copy of it and get it watched, because it is thoroughly entertaining. I hope that we've put it across, you know, well, and just get a copy, watch it.
And I like to say to everybody, the things I say may not be like 100% accurate or 100% what's actually say in the film, but it's more or less close to what actually happened in the film. That's before anyone starts to complain.
If there are things that you want to take up, you know, let us know on the forums and open a discussion, because that's what it's all about. We're a community, a retro community, aren't we, Glenn?
Yes, we certainly are. Anyway, Anthony, I think we've come to the end of the podcast now. And I'd just like to say thank you to everybody in the Retro Asylum community. I'd like to say big thank you to everybody. And Andy, I hope you have a nice, good rest. You deserve it, mate.
Oh, yeah. I hope he's had a bit of time off, and I hope he's enjoyed listening to, you know, the podcast that we've produced. Again, I'd like to say thank you to everybody in the community, everyone on Twitter that follows me. Do you use Twitter, Glenn?
Very rarely.
You can follow Retro Asylum on Twitter. It's at Retro Asylum 1. You can follow myself. It's at Uniforex. And I hope to have some discussions with all of you. Thank you very much.
All right, everybody. We will see you next time.